Hi guys, this is Nadia Hilker. I'm playing Magna on The Walking Dead, and you guys are listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast, and I'm sending you all my love. Bye!
Hello, my name is Cassie McClincy. I play Lydia on The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through. Yay!
Hey there, guys. I'm Callan McAuliffe, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, I'm Lindsley Register, and I play Lara on The Walking Dead. You're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, this is Ross Marquand, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through.
Awesome.
Survivors, welcome to episode 131 of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Kyle.
And I am the artist formerly known as Brian.
And I'm LT. Hey.
Don't ask me. I must be in a goofy mood this week. I don't know.
Well, before we get started with covering this episode, and also we have some feedback from about last week's episode, I'd like to welcome Alma from Sacramento. She's a new member and active on the Facebook group, which we love, like, you know, all, you know, another person to join our discussion and leave comments. So thank you, Alma. We're so happy for you to join us. And hopefully you're here for fear, too, because that's basically Sunday. So welcome, and we're happy to have you on board.
Yeah, we love active people, because that's what makes the podcast. It's not just us,
right? No, for sure,
it's all you as well. And you know, it's like the Renees, the Dietas, the Almas. Now, all of you are just as big a part of this podcast as we are. So,
yep.
New people. We like new people.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, we'll be covering The Walking Dead Season 11, Episode 8, titled For Blood. And we'll also be covering The Walking Dead World Beyond Season 2, Episode 2, titled Foothold. But first, we did get some feedback about the last episode, Promises Broken, and also about, you know, I guess our comments on the podcast. And it comes from our best and favorite voicemail leaver, Renee.
Hi, guys. This is Renee from Atlanta, and I'm calling about The Walking Dead podcast. I just want to touch on some things because I just listened to you guys yesterday while I was in the gym. And, of course, my main theme is Negan. LT, you are absolutely correct. You are entitled to your opinion. You are definitely correct about that. But we're entitled to our opinion as well, me and Dieta. And she and I seem to feel the same way when it comes to Negan and Maggie. I don't like that they would even act like they're playing, act as if they're insinuating or wanting you to think that it could possibly be something between them. Because to me, that's very disrespectful. Because this man killed her husband in cold blood, like bashed him in the head for no reason, no apparent reason, just because they would not bow down to him. Negan, to me, the things that he has done, you cannot come back from, to me. I mean, I'm a Christian, so I do believe that everybody deserves a second chance if they repent and if they are remorseful. Negan clearly is not remorseful. Negan sat up there and told Maggie that if he had the chance to do it again, which I thought he was going to apologize. And when I thought he was going to apologize, I was like, okay, here it goes. Maybe I can look at him in a different light. But instead, he turned around and he said if he could do it all over again, he would kill everyone. How does he think that made her feel? I don't care about you guys or anyone else saying, well, this is Negan. I want Negan to be himself. You know, this is Negan being himself. If he would have done anything else, then he wouldn't have been himself. I don't want Negan to be himself. If Negan expects some type of forgiveness or understanding, he can't be himself. Because Negan was and is a dick. Always has been. He is a dictator. Negan only cares about himself. It's very clear because Negan wanted to leave everyone. Had it not been for Maggie, they would have been gone because Negan only cares about himself. The things that Negan did was was unbelievable. I mean, Burndarrell Faith, what's his name? Faith, I can't think of his name right now. Dwight. Threw the doctor in the fire, had a harem of women. That's enough. I'm a woman. So to me, that is total. No. Now, again, if he's remorseful, but clearly he's not remorseful. And I think it's very disrespectful for them to even play with him and Morgan. I mean, him and Maggie acting like they're shipping each other, like they're looking at each other, some type of attraction. And then for him to call her by her last name or nickname or whatever, I did not like that. And I don't like that they're even playing with that, because to me, it's disrespectful to Glenn. And I just do not like it. Okay, just wanted to finish my point. And with Rick, it's no Negan trying to compare the things that he did against what Maggie and Alexander and Rick and the team did. It's no comparison to me. It's no comparison. You cannot compare them to what Rick and the rest of our people did. They did it to survive. They did it to help other people, not because they wanted to be called I am Rick or I am Michonne or I am Maggie. Negan did it because he's a dictator, and all he wanted, and if he had a chance to do that, be a dictator again, Negan would. I don't see any, it's just, it's no redemption for Negan. Negan just does not care, and I just do not like that. And I know I'm getting too caught up because it is just a freaking show, but I guess I hear on so many podcasts, you know, or just people in general talking about Negan, and what Negan, he redeemed himself and he's no different than Rick. I don't agree with that. And I listened to Podcastica with Jason and Lucy. Now, Jason, to me, Brian, you brought that up. He did an awesome job breaking it down with all the things that Negan did. He did an awesome job to me. And Negan is, I mean, again, I'm a Christian, so I do believe in redemption, but only if you are remorseful, only if you repent. I don't see where Negan is trying to repent. And I do not appreciate the fact that he tried to compare himself with the things that Rick and Maggie and the rest of our team did. When they went to, because I'm getting all upset. And I know it's just a show. And they went to the place and they killed all the Negan team. It was because Negan had killed the 16-year-old, and because Negan was taking all the food, half of the people food. Negan, not because he needed it, just because. I mean, Negan, he needed to die, him and the saviors that followed him. Just like the people with Pope. Pope and all of his people need to die. Pope, I'm glad he's dead, and all of his people need to die that follow him. If you follow fools like that that just kill people for no reason, you need to die because you have some issues. And that means that because Pope is dead, that's just like Leah. Now she wants to use that thing to kill Daryl and all of them. Daryl explained to you that's his family. They're trying to survive just like you guys. You guys came and took their food. All they do is all they want is their food back. And she's just like Pope. I don't like people like that in real life. I don't like people like that at all. So I just had to call in and give you guys my opinion. And LT, we still rock. We always will. But, you know, you feel your way and we feel ours. All right. You guys stay great. Love you guys. Talk to you later. Bye.
Renee, thank you so much for your awesome feedback as always. I would have to say, well,
you don't like Negan.
Yes. And I guess I will just, we'll just kind of probably leave it at that. Cause it's not that I don't disagree with her. I guess I'm just looking into more like, what are they doing with his character? But, you know, I still don't think he's not like, he's like safe. Like he's just like going to live a happy life after everything that happens. Like, I think he's still has to face Maggie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll just have to wait.
Yeah. I mean, there's always the possibility that he will die before the end. I mean, there are 16 episodes left.
Yeah.
In the olden days, that was an entire season. Yeah. Now it's 2/3 of a season, but,
and I'm sure they'll have plenty of opportunities for something to happen.
Yep. Any given Sunday, someone could die. That's a football reference, but, you know, but in this case, I think that, you know, I didn't particularly like it when they were bringing this whole Maggie Negan shipping thingy, and they didn't really, like, they were just, what do you call it? They were trying to put wind on the coals to keep the fires going, the the embers going on Talking Dead. You know, so it's just stop it.
Yeah, yeah. That's
no. Nobody needs to think about that. Nobody needs to discuss that. That shouldn't be. You know, Renee, you're 100% right about that, and she's never going to fall into the arms of her husband's killer, right?
Right.
It was bad enough for Sherry, who, you know, fell into the arms of her husband's fried face maker, whatever, yeah. Melted face maker, you know? So, and obviously she was teed off enough that she was willing to travel halfway across the continent to go get Negan, you know?
Yeah.
Even though you have to think, well, why didn't she do that before? But to me, I think that they just need to leave well enough alone with that. And yeah. So,
well, it's really funny because there have been several interviews with some of the writers who said, we're not really doing that. It's just you reading into this.
Mm. Well, right. I mean, I could see that, but then that's why when I brought up, I was like, why did they bring it up on Talking Dead? And it was kind of like, it almost was like they made a point to like, hey, let's bring this up. Oh, hey, let's read back people's comments. And I was kind of like, wait, what?
I think they made it a point to bring it up because so many people have been bringing it up. I'm not saying that they didn't have a few moments together, but I think that it's like any fan base that they just ran with it.
I mean, why do people fall in love with serial killers or mass murderers? You know, is it the bad boy, you know, that they fall in love with? I don't know, but it seems like a similar kind of thing.
It happens.
Oh yeah. I know it happens. I don't understand it, but it does happen. And, I don't like it when it does. It's not something I like to see. So I just wish that they wouldn't show it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into this week's episode, season 11, episode 8, titled For Blood, written by Eric Mountain and directed by Sharat Raju. Description by AMC.com was the Reapers defend Meridian from a herd. Alexandrians protect themselves from walkers in a storm. All right, well, let's go into our ratings. I guess I'll go ahead and just start with mine. And I gave it a 7, whatchamacallit, out of 10.
Well, I gave it an 8.5 out of 10, Shawshanked Redemptions.
8, maybe 8 badass mamas for Rosita.
Yep, okay, take that. All right, well, let's go into our listeners' ratings, and I'll start with Dieta from Detroit, and she said, I rate this episode 7 out of 10, walk like a whisperer, but don't get blown up like one.
Glenn from Toronto says 7 out of 10, stay away from the windows.
Clint from Indianapolis says, I give the episode a solid 7.9, exploding walkers out of 10.
And Renee from Atlanta gave it a 5 out of 10. Serious, Daryl. Why didn't you push that arrow thingy over the wall like you did that Reaper? Eye roll, eye roll.
And finally, Alma from Sacramento says, I give this episode a 7 out of 10. I was just meh. Shrug.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you, listeners. And let's go into our awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce!
All right, we'll start with our listener's awesome sauce, and the first one we'll start again with Dieta from Detroit, and she said, Rosita, taking on the door jam walkers by yourself.
Okay, Glenn from Toronto says, Judas' quick reaction to save Gracie with disarming that walker. Wink. Rosita's multi-walker kills reminds me of when Rick Grimes went out and started killing all those walkers after Carl had lost his eye in The Walking Dead Season 6, Episode 9, No Way Out.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Renee from Atlanta. She says, Rosita took them walkers out like she was Michonne or Carol. And that is a hug, hug, and a hug. We have another badass female walker killer. Strong arm and strong arm. Judith is so much like her parents that it's unbelievable. Rick and Michonne did a wonderful job raising her. Indeed, they did.
Yep, agree.
Maggie, strong arm emoji, another badass female. She can hotwire a car, and she's an excellent driver.
All right, Alma from Sacramento, she gave her awesome as the end of the first scene where the Reaper dude gets shanked by whispering Negan and Maggie. And crazy face emoji. And Rosita the Walker killing pimp, strong arm emoji. Yes. Yeah, that one scene was definitely one of my favorites. Let's get into our awesome sauce then. All right, LT, what do you got?
Well, since they already mentioned that, that was one of my awesome sauces. The poor guy who volunteered to lead the herd off and then realized he was in the midst of them. And then he got done just like Jesus did the first time we saw the Whisperers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That he's like whacking walkers. And then all of a sudden it was like, you know, duck, duck, stab, stab. I really thought it was awesome when Father Gabriel found that scoped rifle and was up there shooting and hitting things. They actually interviewed Seth Gilliam, and he was really funny because he said, yeah, this sort of makes up for the time during the Savior War when Negan was standing in front of me and I was firing away at him and didn't hit him. And I was thinking, yeah, you're shooting at him like George Peppard in an A-Team episode. But this time you get to see him putting that one good eye to work with the scope and just taking care of business. I also really thought it was cool that, you know, they led the walkers up, they let the guy draw them off, and then they came back. And even though they were walking them through the minefield, you know, they still managed to get them up to the walls. So then in combination of when Maggie took the gate out, they were still able to get a fairly large number of walkers inside the compound. And at that point, too, it was also pretty slick the fact that was it Elijah that got hit by some fragments and they scooped him up and kept him going so he wouldn't attract attention from the walkers, and they still managed to keep on shambling.
Yeah, I wasn't sure who that necessarily was.
I think it was Negan.
I thought it was Negan, but I wasn't sure if that was Elijah or not.
Well, Elijah's the one that got hit, but I think it was Negan that held him up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, that was still excellent strategy. Even though they figured out they had landmines, that they still managed to walk the walkers through them and set them off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was, like I said, that was really some of the high points of the episode that I really enjoyed.
Yep. Brian, what do you got?
Well, I guess to piggyback on what you just said, I guess that you could say that, you know, I guess who was around for the Whispers? Was it just Negan and Gabriel in that group?
Yeah, of that crew, I think they were the only ones.
Yeah. So between Negan kind of being there, kind of learning the tricks of the trade, and Gabriel maybe being there from the outside looking in, they certainly did kind of learn everything that they needed to learn on how to manipulate walkers to, you know, do their bidding. You know, they had that whole weird thing they did that I honestly forgot about when the Whisperers first showed up. You know, how the zombies were all like kind of behaving in a weird pattern. Mm-hmm. And it was only when like Pope and I think Leah noticed it and they asked Daryl, and he's like, yeah, we've seen this before. And it's like, oh yeah, you have seen this before, haven't you? Mm-hmm. That I realized, oh yeah, that's something that they did. Because Maggie was nowhere near there. So I was impressed like how much Negan learned and taught to them, and how much Gabriel you know, also from his end, remembered the things that they did. So anyway, I was impressed with that. I didn't have that in my notes, but I wanted to mention it. And the second and final thing I want to bring up, I'll agree with Rosita being a badass. That's already been said. But the third thing, and the one thing that I actually had written down, was I thought it was awesome that it was Leah was the one that ended up killing Pope, not Maggie or Daryl, which is kind of how I was thinking was going to go. I have more about Pope in the weak sauce and the what sauce, but in terms of just that whole, I'm not surprised that he died this week.
Yeah.
I figured, given the other stuff going on, I figured that Pope and his group, they couldn't be there for the whole season. Right. So, it was mentioned on Talking Dead that apparently, you know, they wrote a good chunk of this season without knowing that this was the last season. So, like, it's worth, you know, maybe thinking that Pope and his group they may have been originally written for them to be an entire seasonal threat, and they were kind of scaled back because of COVID. And maybe they weren't going to bring the most of the Commonwealth stuff into season 12, you know, maybe. But anyway, given what they gave, I did think that it was surprising that Leah, you know, killed him. I think that she was right to. I think he was clearly off his rocker, and he wasn't, you know, going after them for the right reasons. He was going after them for just not because they were, you know, Maggie was a threat. It was because, you know, I've found an interesting match. You know, I have someone I can play chess with kind of thing. Not like an interesting opponent versus a real threat. And to me, it just, I don't know. They're actively going out and killing the people, and to me, that just seems so stupid. Yeah. So, anyway, that's it.
Alrighty. Yeah. I mean, I was just happy that he was killed, and I mean, I didn't get to watch Talking Dead, and so like if it was mentioned that this was going to be a longer arc originally because I didn't know. I'm glad that they shortened it down. You know, knowing that, like, okay, this is a final season, this and that. Cause it's not that I don't think he was like not, he might have been interesting, but it seemed very, and maybe that's part of all. It just seemed this was all just really rushed, and it just seemed like, okay, well, this is just a Maggie Leah thing. And, you know, I'm like, I don't want to see this go on and on and on and on. And so, you know, just seeing him gone at this episode was like, okay, perfect, great. But then also then seeing Leah still alive and then she turns her back, then I'm kind of like, okay, well then, yes, we're not seeing the end of them. It's just now Pope's gone, which that's good. And so maybe the Leah, like her being in charge and being a threat has some other dynamic because of Daryl and her relationship. So that could be interesting. So I didn't expect that it was going to be her to kill Pope because I really thought it would be Daryl, but, you know, yay, at least there was that. and then I'll just agree with all you guys, like everything that's been said about the whisper tactics and all that stuff. Cause I don't know that there was that scene when they are sitting on the wall and like Pope and them, they're talking, it's like, oh, why are they walking that way? And then Daryl's all like, oh, he's like, oh yeah, I've seen that. But I probably was looking into it, but I thought it's like, I bet Daryl was probably really impressed with Maggie that it was just like, oh, okay. They're totally pulling a whisper thing to like, you know, come after Pope. And I don't know. I would have been sitting there being like, oh, that's sweet. Like Maggie.
Cause you know, Daryl had to know.
Oh gosh. Yeah, totally. I mean, he was looking for them, but you know, I just want to kind of think that he was looking out there going, okay, my family's badass.
Most certainly new. I mean, yeah.
Well, it's the whole thing of I'm waiting for the signal, and I think that's the signal.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, that was pretty much all I had. So let's go into our weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
Dieta from Detroit says the whole let's hide in the one house that doesn't have a good supported door. Come on now, Root. If Rosita just killed the walkers around the door, but now they have to hold the door shut from the other walkers, where did they come from? Yeah, suspension of disbelief.
I'm still trying to figure out, like, is that the only house that's still standing?
Yeah, that's
that's how they're making it seem, you know? Yeah. And, like, I'm still thinking, I can't get it out of my head. Jerry, in that one episode where he's peeing and he's like, looking out the door. And it's like, where exactly are you peeing?
Yeah, I don't know if, I don't know if it was a window or, where exactly he was. But, I mean, my whole thing was, not that the storm and, like, oh, they're in trouble and, like, oh, the walls are falling, you know, like, whatever. There's stuff that's happening and they're just hiding in this house. But, I mean, I don't know. As much as they've been through, and, I mean, I know that they've been dealing with, like, looking for food, but they were looking for tools because they were trying to rebuild the walls. Why isn't this not already kind of a plan of theirs to be like, oh, yeah, here's a house. Like, we should reinforce our doors. You know, the windows should be, like, you know, boarded up or something. Because it's not like that walkers don't break in, like, every other week.
All right.
And so it just seemed very kind of odd that, like, this door was rotted out, and then yet no one thought about that, because it's like, oh, that should be fixed, because it's like been attacked by the wolves, you know, they've been attacked by the whisperers, they've been attacked by walkers breaking through the walls. It just seems like you would have fortified your position.
Well, and think about it like this. There are two or three houses that we've seen that have a brick first floor. I mean, I think the apartment that Daryl was living in Alexandria had a brick first floor. The building that had the cell underneath where they kept Negan had a brick first floor. Mm-hmm. You know, pick a better building, guys.
That was kind of my point. It's like, you know,
you've got other houses. Go bunker up somewhere else.
Why are they not making walls made of concrete? Or stone, or, you know, something that's not going to get knocked over.
Yeah.
You know?
Or even if you're near, not even near the army base. There are plenty of plants and factories that have those big wire cages. You know, make them into, like, HESCO walls, like the military makes bases with. They're basically just big wire cages full of dirt.
Well, plus they used to have those, you know, I think we first saw them and in Clear that Morgan built, where he had these areas where there were these contraptions that were just these big spears, and their sole purpose was to catch walkers. You know, the walkers would go by, the walkers would get stuck. Eventually they'd get stuck. They wouldn't be able to move. You'd come by, poke them in the head, you know, clear them off, and you know, then the spear is ready for the next one. You know, just, I don't know.
I just haven't had time, I guess. I don't know.
Well, and sort of along those lines, the classic field engineering thing is a chevaux de frise, which is, you've always seen the logs that have, like, the X's. The logs, the smaller logs pushed through them, so they're X's.
Yeah.
So you basically have the log you can just set across the road. Yes, that, and hopefully my French is close enough, but that's a chevaux de frise.
You know what you reminded me of when you said that? You reminded me of that very small tree that was laying across the road in fear. That they couldn't get past.
I will always have fond memories of my very small tree across the road.
was your first episode, wasn't it?
I think it was. It was close.
Yeah.
But just like you're saying, there are ways you could make effective barricades that didn't take long to build of things other than tin roof and telephone poles.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, if I were, you know, the leader of a community, I wouldn't have a wall. I'd have five walls and, there'd be multiple layers of strength, and, you know, it would take a lot for the walkers to get through. And,
prison. They had that in the prison. Yeah. They had two layers of fences.
Yeah. Yeah. And if, you know, if they got through, you know, one level, you just clear off you'd block off the next level, you know, so give you lots of time.
Yep.
Anyway.
Or dig a ditch.
Dig a ditch.
Yep. Oh, well. All right. Well, that was all our listeners' weak sauce. LT, you want to go with yours?
Well, my biggest one was, okay, so you brought this new guy into your group, and you keep wondering where his loyalty is. So if that's the case, why is it that Pope keeps letting Daryl go off by himself, unsupervised?
Yes.
And then there's always, Leo's like, oh, where have you been? Oh, I went to go check something.
I was checking the wall, totally not where the guy just fell off and is now leaving the...
Hey, somebody needs to go over there. Oh, I'll go, you know? Gee, Daryl, you've been that enthusiastic like never.
Well, and at least the one time when it's like, hey, let me outside and I'll lead the walkers off. And they went, no.
Right.
Because if he was outside, he could run away, I think is the thought. But yeah, they, for somebody you're kind of questioning, and even Leah, you know, you sort of suspect that she's questioning his loyalty just by some of the looks she was giving him, but yet you let him go trotting off by himself to pop locks and throw guards over the wall and all these other things. So this is not the best decision processing tree in the world there, kids.
The whole Pope, Leah, and Daryl thing was, it was kind of very loose, because it was like Pope is kind of leader, yet Leah somehow has some...
Well, he's the Pope.
Well, he is the Pope, yeah. But I mean, but then Leah always was able to kind of push against him, and yet that seemed to not be really a problem. But then, like, Daryl is like this total, like, variable that Pope would have been like if he has this puzzle to solve with Maggie, then why wouldn't Daryl be the same way? So yeah, I don't know. I just, the whole thing, it just seemed like Pope would have been like, no, I don't trust him, like, get rid of him. Or, you know, like, not you, like Leah, but like one of the other guys, like, you follow him around and, like, you know, blah blah blah. So
yeah,
that just made it too convenient. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll go into mine. It was just the whole Gracie going down in the basement to find a weapon that was like, I think she even says like, oh, I wanted to find a weapon like you and Michonne or your mom or whatever. And because it was like, okay, the walkers are like everybody's running off. They're going upstairs to, you know, go, you know, find more, you know, get more shelter, because they know the walkers are coming through the door. And it was just like, really? Like, I don't know. It to me, it was just stupid and weak, and it was like unnecessary. But, you know, they had to do it so that, you know, they could be down in the basement, and then, you know, Judith could be in trouble and, like, or something. I don't know. It was just silly.
Well, that's kind of part two of your house thing. Is that if you know that the walkers could breach the fence at any time, why don't you have weapons near the door?
Right. Yeah.
Why don't you have weapons upstairs where you can get to them?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. All right. Brian, did you have anything?
Pope, I want to ask you a question. If you're so obsessed with defeating Maggie, why aren't you pushing Daryl for more info? And for that matter, why was Dog not a part of this fight? Like, think about it. Last episode, when Leah and Daryl went out to, you know, find them, this is just before this was, they were in that, that house, and, you know, Daryl kind of signaled them way to Bolt. Before that, he left Dog, right? Mm-hmm. And Leah didn't really question it. So his two owners left Dog there. We don't get to see Dog in this episode at all. No one thinks, hey, why did you leave Dog? You know? So I have to, I just, it didn't make sense, that whole thing. I thought for sure that that Dog was going to play into this episode this week, and Dog did not. So that is a shortcoming, I find, of the episode itself.
Yeah.
Maybe Dog's agent didn't get it into his contract.
And I nearly forgot to put this, to mention this. How far is Meridian to Alexandria?
That I don't know. And actually, I don't know if it was Dieta or somebody that bring this up in feedback. But
as far as it needs to be?
I mean, yeah.
As far as it needs to be, you know, Alexandria has like hurricane
force rain.
Force rain. And Meridian has nothing. Yeah. Zero. Supposedly at the same time.
And the ground's not even wet.
It's not raining. It's there's no wind, nothing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I have seen that, you know, living in Florida, I have seen that within, you know, portions of the state, but, you know, assuming that Meridian and Alexandria are, say, within 50 miles of each other, one would expect that if there's a major storm at one of those areas, you would expect major storm at the other one. So that's a weak sauce for me.
Yeah.
Or at least be sprinkly or cloudy or something.
Lightning in the distance.
Or, you know, near the end saying, you know, oh, there's a storm coming, you know.
All right. Well, let's go into our what sauce.
What?
And we got one from our listeners, and actually it came from Renee, and her what sauce is Daryl not killing Leah was a bad move, and like I said earlier, he should have pushed that arrow thingy over the edge. I was screaming, Daryl, push that crap over the wall, because I had a bad feeling my feelings panned out to be true. Eye roll, shrug. Dieta Patterson, I agree with you about Daryl. I was like, damn, Daryl, fix your face, shawty. And
that's damn, Daryl, fix your face, shawty.
Then she also says, why the hell is Negan still here? ? So I think we'll get into what she commented on Dieta in her feedback. So that was all the what sauce that we got from our listeners. So let's go into ours. And I'm assuming you're going to agree with me, LT. So I will start.
Because I'm going to talk about it more when you're done.
Good. I'm glad because, yeah. So the Hawachi or whatever it's called.
Hawacha. Oh. I love that word, by the way. Don't you guys love that word? Isn't that such a wonderful word?
It's a
who came up with that word? It's a wonderful word. Well, I guess it's Korean, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Hawacha.
But I mean, still, when it appeared, or I don't know, I just it seemed like so much for like one specific task, which I guess is just to like, yeah, I guess obliterate. Like, I mean, like I don't know, like what was their idea of like, oh, what would we use this for? Like, because this situation with all the walkers and all this stuff was not in their battle plans. They were not thinking this. And if, yeah, anyways, but I just like didn't understand it because I was like, one, where do you get all the supplies to even make this thing? And then two, and I was like, even big bottle rockets don't always go like directly straight. And I would imagine at this thing looked like it was complex. And even if you're like the best at what you're doing, it's like, and in this world and using not all the right parts, that like one of them would have not shot, you know, wouldn't have made it out. And then it would just set the whole entire thing on fire and exploded.
Yeah. Yeah, you would expect the thing to just like blow up in its face, you know,
like, or like get some off, but then all of a sudden it would just generate so much heat and fire that it just would have exploded. But then
it's like, you know, like what are you gonna do after you set the thing off?
Yeah, like it's
like one shot. You got one shot, and then that's basically it. You know, it will probably be in flames. After that, so you know, it's like a shoot once and it's done.
Yeah,
and then it'll take another 2 years to make another one.
Yeah. But then I was also gonna go, it's like I was agreeing with the rest, like with the rest of the listeners, you know, like on Daryl, because it was like he could have like possibly tipped it over. I mean, he could have lit it and spun it around and pointed it the other direction, like before he took off. Like he could have done something. But
I would have to go back and look at it, but perhaps maybe he just didn't know what the heck it was. And maybe that's why he didn't act. You know, he's just like, what the hell is that? You know?
I mean, it is the first Hawacha that we've ever seen, like in The Walking Dead. It seems so out of place.
It seems like a Game of Thrones type thing. And I heard someone say that they had something like this on the zombie show Kingdom, which is on Netflix, which is actually Korean zombie TV show.
Yeah, but that was like a period piece, so it would fit.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like a foolhardy weapon. And
right. It just seemed it was a lot for just like one specific thing to do. And I don't know what in their mind that they had in their planning that they were like, oh yeah, that's what we need. Like this is the perfect thing to answer like our enemies coming after us at the gate.
Like, how fast does a bottle rocket travel?
Well, that's some of the logistics of this is what I was going to get into. So.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you go on it. I mean, I didn't really have much else to say other than just basically it was like they might as well just pulled out big cannons and yelled "Arg!" like fire in the hole because it made no sense.
Well, you know, and we may find in February exactly how little this makes sense. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Well, they did. I want to say it was on World's Greatest Warriors. There was some show that they talked about this, that the Chinese had something back, you know, in, say, the 1300s or 1400s that they called like a nest of bees. And it was the same sort of thing. It was a rocket propelled arrow launcher. And the problem with this thing is the reason it never really caught on is some of the things you're talking about. It's hard to reload because you're shooting the arrow through, you know, basically a hole in the board. That's sort of your thing about that. Will it get caught? Will it launch? The biggest thing is it's an area attack weapon. It's not a point attack weapon like a bow or a ballista or some type of crossbow. That the way you're supposed to use it is to shoot it at somebody at a distance. So the rocket basically propels the arrow up into the air, and then the inertia of the weight and gravity will add more velocity as the arrow comes back down. So the fact that it's rocket propelled is not to make the arrow go really, really fast. It's to give the arrow its initial launch up and over. And the big thing is that the people underneath the wall, I don't know if the arrows are going to be going that fast to really do a lot of damage. Of course, it's a TV show, so I'm sure that there will be lots of people getting poked with them. But yeah, that's sort of the point, that this is a, you know, like a long range rocket propelled volley of arrows, so that instead of having, you know, 50 or 60 archers shooting at a point or an area target, you've got this one thing. And as far as building it, I mean, it wouldn't be any harder than building arrows. And, you know, black powder, you can make black powder from stuff you can dig up if you can actually have a cave to get the saltpeter. Because, I mean, it's just saltpeter, sulfur, and charcoal. So you could make black powder. The casings for the motor would probably be a little more difficult. But, yeah, I don't see that shooting it down off the roof is going to be that effective unless you had really, really good rockets. And even then, you know, from this shit, like I said, it was kind of like a Mythbusters type show that the guys built it and actually used it to see if it would work. Because some of these things are also in the realm of Leonardo da Vinci's sketchbook. That, you know, Da Vinci had a lot of good ideas, but it never, some of them were impractical with the materials that they had. So, you know, it's back to realistic LTs going, I don't know. I mean, it's a cool effect. I mean, the other part of it is supposed to be like fire arrows, that the whole thing that's so psychologically disturbing about getting shot with an arrow is the fact that your eye perceives the movement, but it's fast enough that you can't get out of the way. And the whole idea of flaming arrows is supposed to, you know, strike fear into the hearts of your enemy, so they're, you know, frightened and demoralized by these flaming bolts of death that are coming screaming over your castle wall at them. But I'm kind of going, they're walkers. Walkers can't be scared. They're, you know, they're pretty much just
unless
going to
keep, whisperers.
Unless they're whisperers. Yes, Brian, I know. But the it's kind of like the whole thing with the bugs in Starship Troopers. The bugs just keep coming because they don't get scared. They're just one big, huge, semi-brainless herd.
Yeah.
So, cool special effect, not a bad idea, just probably not the most practical idea in the world. If it had been me, you've got enough old broken down cars there, you've got the raw materials, you build some ballistas. You know, take that leaf spring out of that old Toyota and make you a nice big siege crossbow to shoot some curtain rod sized bolts out of. And to me, that would be far more effective than just having our fusillade of semi-effective rocket arrows.
Something that would be reusable. Because to me, this is a fire once and forget it.
Yeah.
Well, and like I said, if you took the time to build 50 more bottle rockets and arrows, you could reload it. It would take a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is reloadable, just not at a speed that's practicable.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, a rocket is, you know, in theory, reusable. However, it's not going to land back on the earth and you get to use it 5 minutes later. You know, it takes some time for it to you know, for you to reuse it again. And it's the same thing with this kind of, okay, my example's not that great. But the point being is that, I don't know, well, we've never had a Hawacha. That would be kind of cool to build.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it seems to be sometimes. And
I think what even Pope even said was just like, this thing was supposed to be basically like a weapon of mass destruction. And so it would just obliterate anything that it was going to hit. And then he was like, and then we'll clean up after the fact. But I still don't see how that would actually do that.
Yeah.
So it seemed like LT was talking about, like these, the cars and like what the, like making them make big giant bow and arrows with like huge, like curtain rod things, like would be scary. And like,
if the Hawachas could like upon impact blow stuff up, then, you know, I could see it, because there might be some collateral damage that you would get. But it, for all I know, the Hawacha is essentially just effectively an arrow. So it's going to hit walkers, and instead of, you know, it might hit some of them in the head, but for others, it's just going to be a walker with an arrow in its body.
Yeah.
You know?
And on fire.
And on fire.
And just posit the idea that maybe Pope was not necessarily thinking about using it against walkers. Maybe he's talking about using it against, you know, people.
Yeah.
That he's expecting, you know, an assault of humans. And, you know, people people are prone to being scared off and being freaked out by that sort of thing. So,
yeah, that's true. All right. Well,
Hawacha. So that's my editorial content on watches.
Thank you, LT.
Hawacha.
Full of knowledge and, you know, know how. It's perfect.
Yeah. And most of what I have to say about the Hawacha is how fun it is to say. Well, I want to just, you know, I talked about it a little bit already, but just, I think Pope and the Reapers started off to have this opponent that, although some of it was kind of like, you know, oh, not another enemy, you know, how many enemies does this show have to have? There was some potential there, you know. Pope marked you. Mm-hmm. Well, why did Pope mark you, Maggie? It seems like Pope marked you because he was bored. You know, you were an opponent that seemed worthy to him, and he was just bored. You know, he just didn't like the idea of you coming back and trying to get your stuff back. And so, you know, he actively went out and tried to hunt your people down, and obviously killed most of them. So I thought the character of Pope, for the most part, up until the end, was very interesting. And, you know, his turn to this, like, basically had either didn't care about his family, you know, or if it was just that had gone nuts, right? Mm-hmm. You know, oh, well, they're just making a sacrifice. You know, he had to go, and it was clear that was a dark turn, and you know, was almost like governor-like, I guess you could say. But on the whole, the promise of Pope and the Reapers, given, you know, we originally thought that they were this formidable force. LT, you talked about it specifically.
Mm-hmm.
We thought these guys were badasses, that they were, you know, second to none in the apocalypse, that they were a trained fighting force, and they just seemed to go down like any other enemy, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm just very disappointed in the Reapers and the whole storyline. And I know Renee and Dieta and a lot of people have been kind of like, you know, ho-hum on the Reapers. And, you know, I had hoped that the story was going to, there was going to be more to it, and it just wasn't enough to it. So I thought Richie Koster was really good in the role, although there were times upon reflection that it felt like his accent would go in and out. You know, I could hear his English accent sometimes. Originally, I didn't hear it at all. And then it seemed like whenever he would start yelling, I'd be like, oh, I hear an accent there. I used to occasionally hear that in Rick Grimes too. You'd like whenever Rick would start yelling, you could start hearing an English accent on him until maybe the end of season two. And then that was pretty much gone.
Yeah.
But anyway, Pope and the Reapers, and the Reapers aren't done, but I expect them to be done by the end of the next episode, you know, and we'll probably see Leah die, or the unthinkable Leah, you know, ends up with Daryl. I just don't see that happening.
No.
Yeah.
No. You know, or Gabriel recruits the priest.
No.
I'm kidding.
I think we're going to have our big cloak on cloak showdown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So anyway, kidding aside, I think the end of the Reapers will be in February when we next see The Walking Dead. So
yep.
That's what I say. What sauce abound.
Well, and I guess the final thing, since you said something about it, I think that it was a lot of wasted potential. I think they could have done a lot with it.
Yep. Wasted potential is exactly what I would say. Wasted potential.
Well, makes it wonder if they had more time, or if they had, you know, ideas, but, you know, if they were cutting it, this is what they gave us. So I'm just kind of glad
that it's what we got.
Yep. We'll have to take it.
It's also just worth saying how much of the story got affected by COVID too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
that could have been something to do with it.
Yeah. I think this is going to be more, I want to go on a limb and say it was less COVID and more, oh, by the way, this is all the episodes we have left.
And you have to do something with it.
So how many more plot complications got left on the cutting room floor, so to speak?
In the hole where they thought they were going to have, like, say, two seasons, they didn't lose that many episodes. They got 24 instead of 16, so they're plus 8, and then they got 6 instead of 0. So essentially they only lost 2 episodes. But those 6 episodes, or at least most of those 6 episodes, were telling stories that they weren't intending to tell.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I could see maybe them telling the Pope story, but the rest of them, I don't think they were intending to tell those stories. So essentially, if you take that one out, there were 5 episodes that they didn't get to tell. And maybe in some ways, the 5 episodes that we got are 5 episodes that maybe they were thinking of telling in one of the news items that we have coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All righty.
That's all I have to say.
All right. Well, let's go into our sad and aw sauce. And we actually surprisingly got just one from Renee from Atlanta. And she says, Daryl looking all pitiful when he thought our people were going to get killed by the arrow thingy. And when Leah said she wasn't going with him. Sad face, sad face. It's okay, Daryl. Connie's at home waiting on your return. I was not happy when Aaron kissed Gracie bye, and he didn't kiss Judith. I know that's not her father, but with both of her parents not being there, they all need to be hugging her and RJ. Yeah, I didn't really think. I don't know. I, you know, Judith is kind of,
she's taking care of all the other kids. And then it is kind of like, we know that she's pretty capable. So it's kind of like she could still go with like Carol and Aaron. And then when they were out there, you know, taking care of, you know, the walls and stuff like that. But I mean, you know, it's, that would be a risk, obviously. But I mean, since there are kids, and also I noticed there are many more babies. They ran like a whole school full all the way up that stairway. I was like, oh my gosh, how many kids did they like create?
They're all Jerry.
Jerry. He's just been.
That's all Jerry's kids.
Jerry's kids.
I just.
No, yeah. Jerry's children.
Oh my goodness. No, don't do go there, Brian.
Oh God.
Anyways, yeah.
Thanks, Brian. If that was insensitive to anyone,
I wasn't trying to be.
Oh, God. Oh, anyways, so yeah, I guess that's really all I had to like comment on that. All right, well, let's go into ours. I didn't really have any. So you want to take it, LT?
Yep. Yeah, we had talked about the scenes with Judith and Gracie. I definitely thought that was, you know, it was cool, but it was also, there was, you could tell there was some sadness and angst there. Also when Rosita came back in after she had her, you know, pose in the doorway shot, but just, you know, the look in her eye when she saw the kids, you know, you could sort of, it would, I don't know how else to describe it other than it was like just a real maternal sort of look. Mm. And I kind of got a little broke up over that, just because it's almost like to me that she went all badass, but then came back in and it's like, it was really stupid of me to take such a big risk, even though it was necessary, because I need to help protect the kids. And that was my kind of feeling on it. It was a great scene, but it was just kind of emotional.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. 'Cause it's like, you know, she has her kid with, Father Gabriel, right? Isn't that who she's with? But you know, it's like she risked, you know, she went out there to basically save everybody and she went all badass.
Right.
But then coming back in, you're right. It's kind of like, you know, like if I didn't make it, I would be leaving them basically and my child, yep, like without a parent. And here's, you know, Judith, whose parents are gone, and RJ. And
it's sort of that strange calculus that you're going, somebody has to be badass and somebody has to go take care of business, but yet somebody's got to survive to take care of the kids.
Kids, yeah. Yeah. And yeah, that's, you could see that in her face. I would agree with that, because it was really a good scene.
She did what was necessary.
Yep.
That's the way, yep, I would look on it. A means to an end. And yep. I think she realized that. So, you know, I think you said, you know, it was like calculated risk. It was calculus there, and she did what she needed to by killing walkers that I think were probably close to the door, and to do it in such a way that kind of blocked the door. I mean, mm-hmm, that was my impression. That would buy them time. So anyway, good on her.
Yep.
You'd mentioned Judith and Gracie. I'll extend it to Judith with Virgil, which was kind of before that. And I was kind of surprised by that whole thing, because, you know, it seems like Virgil is like, you know, turning a new leaf. I wouldn't have trusted him as far as I could throw him before that that crazy episode a couple weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
He was good in this episode, and I thought that he consoled Judith in a convincing way. Although part of me was kind of like, well, you know, what do you know about Michelle?
Right. That's what I thought too. I was like,
yeah, what do you know about her? Anyway, so that's it.
All right. All right. Well, let's go into our feedback.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Well, we have a voicemail from Renee from Atlanta, so I will go ahead and play that.
Hi, guys. This is Renee from Atlanta calling in again. This is like my third time calling today, but I don't know how in the world I forgot to mention Judith. I should have started off with her because Megan and I really do not give a freak about. But Judith, I feel so bad. And it's like The Walking Dead keeps harkening on it. Like, she was saying she missed her mother and how she's looking sad. And then Virgil was like, your mother, you know, she's still with you and you're with your mother. I just don't like it. And I don't like that Aaron kissed Gracie and no one kissed Judith by. I just feel bad for those children. And it may be because, like the other day, we're coming from a mother's perspective and just seeing her all by herself. And, I mean, Rosita is playing a auntie figure. And I know Daryl, but Daryl's not there. So I feel like they need to show this little girl some love and her brother because they are going through. They parents are not there. I mean, if The Walking Dead is going to keep talking about it, Diessa, you said you don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but The Walking Dead keeps beating a dead horse, so guess what? I'm going to keep beating it, too. Get Michonne back there, or Rick back there, because they kids need them, and I just don't like the way that they're portraying Michonne, period. I do not like it. I don't like it. I do not like the way they're portraying her. And I don't know if I might feel like it's a little racism there or something. I don't know. That she's a black woman and she left her children. I don't like that. I got a problem with that. I'm telling you, I do not like that. I don't like that storyline. I can't stand that storyline because, again, mothers don't leave their children. So I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm taking it some type of way. I don't know. Maybe I need to work on my feelings or something because I feel so emotional about that. When I saw that little girl, I wanted to cry. But then again, it may not be racist because Jason talked about it on podcast about how he felt. He felt a certain way and it made him feel sad. So I don't know. I just don't like it. And I want them to show her more love. I saw that she's going to see Daryl and she's going to run up to him. I need that. I need that because if not Walking Dead getting on there, I'll be the little girl's mother and RJ's mother. Okay. Right. I hope your wife had a wonderful birthday. Talk to you guys later.
Again, thank you, Renee, for sending in your voicemail. We always like to hear it. I mean, I haven't listened to those other podcasts, so I don't really find that there was anything racist.
I did.
Okay. Well, then would you like to comment? Because I'm
no.
Okay.
No. I mean, I agree with Jason and the things that he said, and I don't think it was racial. I think that it was just bad writing. You know, I think that it was bad writing. We've seen bad writing choices happen in this franchise when actors have decided to move on and they've wanted to like keep an option for them to bring them back. And I think it's that, you know, option. Well, we don't want to kill them. We end up with these virtually implausible things that like it almost seems more appropriate for those characters to die than it does for them to like leave their family like this. And I think Michonne was kind of done dirty, but then again, I think Maggie was also done dirty.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that, you know, either thing was, had anything to do with race. If anything, it had to do with, well, you know, here, this actor is under contract and they have decided to move on. And so, you know, we have to kind of come up with a storyline that somehow explains them leaving the show when we weren't expecting to.
Right.
And that's, to me, that's what, because to me, that also explains Rick's storyline, because Rick's storyline makes no sense. It makes no sense. I mean, they make it so that everyone on this show, every character thinks he's dead and they play him like he's dead, but everyone, you know, out you know, in the real world knows that he's not dead, you know, and maybe there's one character in the whole, you know, universe, well, maybe two, and we don't know for sure of the second one, but one character in the whole Walking Dead universe that knows that he's not dead. And that is, of course, the leader of the garbage dump.
Yes, Jadis.
Yes. None other than Jadis, the crazy, crazy one that I would want to strangle. She was very, very, very annoying.
Oh, we're getting ready to see her again.
Yes, we're about to see her.
The thing with Maggie is, you know, they were able to bring her back just because one of the reasons she left didn't work.
Yeah.
And I guess that in Michonne's case, she became a part of another franchise that is enjoying a degree of relative success.
Yeah. I think that she joined on for Black Panther in a small part, and Black Panther did way better than they ever expected. And, you know, they probably signed her to much bigger contract. And as a result, she's a part of it. And that's what I think happened in this case. It sucks. And I think that, as far as a story, I think she was done wrong, Renee. I agree. Was it racially motivated? I don't think so. I honestly would think that if she had been any other skin color, I think she would have, there would have been something very similar. You know, I don't think it had anything to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that the way she was written out was kind of not the great. It was just a kind of a weird way that just like, okay, here she goes. She's gone.
Yeah.
You know, like whatever. There was like not much there, but,
and the other thing to mention is, you're not alone in being very frustrated with this, right? This is why it happened. I don't like it either. I mean, I'm just kind of like pragmatic, you know, I just understand it because, you know.
Well, it wasn't quite like Chuck Cunningham.
Chuck Cunningham?
Richie Cunningham's brother from Happy Days.
Oh, yes, yes.
His brother went upstairs to his room and
never came back.
Was seen again. So yeah. at least it wasn't something like that. I agree. You know, I'm agreeing with you, Brian, that it was sort of maladroit the way that they wrote her off.
Yeah.
And I think they were trying to come up with a way, sort of like they did with Maggie, a way to let her leave the show so that there was still some inkling of a chance that she would show back up later.
Right.
Yeah. Is she not supposed to be in the movies?
See, I think she is.
That's what I thought I remember.
But yeah. The problem is right now she's doing voice work for Marvel. She's doing, you know, they're doing another, and I don't know how they're going to pull it off without Chadwick Boseman, but they are doing another Black Panther movie.
Yeah.
And God knows if they do anything else. And what is it? I can't think of it's not series four, but whatever the next MCU evolution is, they may be doing, you know, she may have a part in, I think they were talking about doing like West Coast Avengers or New Avengers.
Right.
Yeah.
They're doing, you know, the Hawkeye movie's coming out. So they're going to keep making movies as long as people go see them.
And they're going to keep going to see them.
And her character is a part of the whole Wakanda arc now. So
right.
I don't know. I mean, we can look at it cynically and say, well, you know, I don't think Scott Gimple can offer her as big a paycheck as the mouse does.
Yeah.
I think maybe just for fan pressure and sentimentality, maybe they'd give her a chance to come back.
Just to kind of like make a last deal.
Yeah, like we said, we know that they had rumored she was going to be in the movies. So if the movies hit, we will have a potential of seeing her and Andrew Lincoln again.
And it's frustrating, you know, and I would have hoped that by now we would have had the first Walking Dead movie. You know, it either would have been out or we would have seen a trailer and we would have been expecting it, you know, in summer 2022 or what have you. And then a little thing called COVID hit and it threw everything into disarray. And also it's taking them a lot longer to get a script together. And, you know, there have obviously been some things going on behind the scenes. There's something that we'll talk about in the news about AMC, you know, that's, you know, maybe influencing it a little bit as well. So, you know, who knows yeah. what's going on, but all these things I think affect what's happening. And I want to see Rick come back. I want to see Michonne come back with Rick. I want to see that whole thing. I don't like how, you know, they left Judith behind. It doesn't make any sense to me. All of that were in agreement. And I think that it could have been written better.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know what to say, you know, other than this, if I had had a chance to write it, I would have written it better.
Yep.
I guarantee it.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully then, because I mean, I think we've talked along about this, but yeah, it's messy. Never. And sometimes that happens. Like, and you know, we just have to kind of deal with it and hopefully these things get corrected. But I do worry though that because of all the things that have disrupted it, like even Andrew Lincoln's doing movies and stuff like that, it's like there could be a chance where things are just so kind of messed up and timing and all this other stuff that we might not even get the movies, or maybe they turn into like, you know, like episodes of some other, you know, they come up with some other new spinoff or something.
A lot of times movies, you know, fall into something called development hell.
Yeah.
You know, and the script isn't good enough, so they do a rewrite, and yeah. You know that they, you know, then the director that was assigned to do it suddenly isn't available. And then, you know, so then it gets pushed back and, you know, it's all sorts of things. And there's a strike and there's, you know,
yeah, right. It's just like
again and again and again and again and again. There's always so many things.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that you can ever depend upon is when they show a trailer and they say coming out June 22nd and it's June 21st. You can have a reasonable, you can be reasonably, not only can you see it the next day, you can probably see it in the midnight screening. So
yeah,
only then and there can you feel comfortable that, yes, I'm going to get to see this movie.
All right. Well, Renee also left us some written feedback, so I will go on with that. Thank you for the voicemail, Renee, as always. She says, this was not the finale I was expecting. I was hoping the Reapers and Negan storyline was going to come to an end. I'm so over both of them. I wish we could have concentrated on the Alexandria story. To me, it would have been more interesting to see our people, other than Rosita and the kids, fight the walkers at Alexandria. Why would they send Aaron and Carol and the rest of the crew outside in the storm if they weren't going to show it? Shrug. That's a good question. Shrug emoji. I'm super excited about Fear the Walking Dead next week. I think it's going to be really interesting with Strand being the enemy now. Facepalm.
Yep. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but it is available to us if you have AMC Plus, which I do now. And I want to see it.
Yep. I will watch it on Sunday when it comes out. Yeah, again, I wonder, we talked about it just to make, before we move to the next thing. It's just like, yeah, we didn't get to see any clips of Aaron and Carol and the rest of them doing their thing. So it's kind of like time, like budget, money, whatever, you know, it's like they just ran off and they're gone.
And we didn't get to see who was working on the wall in the rain either.
Yeah, yeah. Unless it's in another episode. I don't know. All right. You want to take Dieta?
I will. Okay. Dieta from Detroit says, I found this season finale to be meh. Shrug. It wasn't that good, in my opinion. I'm glad Pope is gone, finally, killed by Leah, who went along with the get-along of Pope's I am God complex. But she ended him, thankfully. Leah is mad Daryl lied, but didn't they both lie when they were at the cabin? She never told him about Pope and the Reapers, but now her feelings are hurt. Girl, bye. Get over it. You really mad because you fought a lunatic who got y'all in a fight that's not going to end well for your people. And she's got two big grin emojis. Daryl should have never told Leah it was his people. Now he has a target on his back. He should have known she wasn't coming with him. Her actions all but said it. Her constantly defending Pope was a telltale sign she wasn't going to turn her back on them with or without Pope. I stand by my earlier statement that Maggie will finish Leah in the end. Daryl can't hold water. How many times did his facial expressions almost give our people up? I was like, Daryl, chill, you're looking real suspect.
You know, I wouldn't be, I could see Maggie killing her. I could see Daryl killing her. I think it would be kind of shocking, but I think I could see that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. She goes on to say something that I think we sort of mentioned. I need to see a map with Alexandria and Meridian on it because it was raining so hard at Alexandria that the house was flooding, but we had people go out to fix a wall and put out a fire. And she's got some chin scratches there. Is Alexandria close to a river? And are all the houses still that raggedy with no windows in the basement? Where did all the walkers come from? I thought when they ended the Whisperers, the horde went off the cliff and died. Thought they should have been walker free for a couple of months.
Yep.
And she's got some shrugs there. And how did the walkers know to attack that house? The noise from the storm should have shielded them from being discovered if they were keeping quiet. No rain in Meridian, though, just explosives and fireworks. Wouldn't that drive more walkers there besides the ones hoarded by Maggie and Negan? I don't know. This episode wasn't given what it was supposed to give, in my opinion, in an okay, so-so episode. I had to watch this episode twice. It was so dark and lackluster, I thought I'd missed something. Waiting patiently for February 20th to finish seeing the takedown of Leah and the leftover Reapers. And she's got some applause emojis after that.
Yeah, I guarantee that will happen next time.
Next time,
yeah. I cannot see the Reapers lasting beyond episode 9. I just can't see it.
Yep, and I would be completely fine with that.
Yep. And, so we were thinking of the same thing there. Maybe if I'd known that you'd said it, I wouldn't have said it. But obviously, if Alexandria is anywhere near Alexandria, Virginia, we know that it is close to, you know, a waterway. It's not right in on the coast, but we do know that it does get hurricanes and tropical storms and stuff like that occasionally, does it not? I mean,
it does.
In fact, if Meridian is closer to the coast, one would expect that Meridian would get it worse often. You know, although as we know, as we've seen so many storms in the recent years, you know, the hurricanes kind of do a dipsy-doo along the coast, and it's kind of like, you know, in a swoosh,
yeah,
and kind of thing, and they end up, their path takes them quite a ways off of the coast. So one might. And then other times the storms will go along the coast, but anyway.
Or if they go inland, they'll hit the mountains and kind of skirt the mountains up north.
Yes.
But see, I'm thinking Meridian was more inland, but still,
They had to go through DC to get to it, right? The subways were in...
Right.
Yeah, so that was a way to wherever they were going.
Probably in Maryland, then.
Could be. Hagerstown. The only place I... Yeah, well, I guess I've been to Baltimore.
Accokeek.
Look at that. There's... Maybe it's Meridian, New York.
Is there one?
Well, yes. That seems a lot of... Oh, wait. There is Meridian, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. That could be. Is it anywhere? No, it's nowhere near.
Yeah. Yes.
It's closer to Pittsburgh. Yeah.
I was going to say Meridian, Connecticut's a little further. And we know it's not Meridian, Mississippi.
And it's definitely not Meridian, New York, because that seems to be like Rochester, Syracuse
kind of
area.
Upstate.
Yes. Probably closer to Albany, which is the wrong show.
Correct.
Yep.
As we found out this week.
Yep, we did. All right. Well, thank you, Dieta. Our next feedback comes from Alma from Sacramento, and she just had all in all, this was a solid episode, but parts just left me feeling meh. Can't wait to hear what everyone else's thoughts.
And as we've said, thank you, Alma, for giving your feedback and to join up and right away, join in with everybody else. We appreciate it. We got one more bit of feedback, and that is from Glynis of Toronto. So she says, Judith and Gracie separated from the rest in the basement with the rising water on one side and walkers on the other is really a false predicament that they'll get out as in the trailer for season 11B. Judith is alive and well. TWD producers themselves have started to spoil TWD with revealing too much in these trailers. The high ratings won't ever recover anyway if they're trying to get extra eyes watching TWD. Well, it's worth saying that when it comes to trailers, a lot of times it's not the producers that are making the trailers. It's the marketing that is making the trailers. So, especially if it's like a highly produced trailer, it's like more the studio doing it. That's why a lot of times you'll see clips that never make it to screen. Mm-hmm. So, next she says, a little ironic that Judith would have probably been safer with going with Carol and company. Maybe, maybe not. We will see about that. Likewise with Daryl, Maggie, Negan in peril with the Aaliyah attack that is going to rain down on their heads. They also survive according to the 11B trailer. And of course, Daryl's plot armor is strong with the Daryl and Carol spinoff. Yes. One cannot forget that. But besides that, it was a pretty good episode with Leah offing Pope and blaming Daryl. Daryl sure is heartbroken and shocked as Leah was looking as if she was coming around to Daryl's way of thinking. He's going to have to end her now as her lying to the Reapers that Daryl killed Pope. She's put a target on Daryl's back as they'll now hunt him down now and probably still continue in their quest to hunt down Maggie too. So Leah could have just stopped all the revenge against Maggie and company and maybe provided a portion of food to Maggie's group and Daryl, but she went through anyway on launching that weapon. So Leah is no better than Pope with her skewed values of protecting family. That 15th century Hoacha was ingenious for its time. That was invented by Korea, which reminds me of the modern-day multi-barreled missile launcher on warships. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriel now being sharp shooter suits him, but better blacken that white collar. And echoes of Sniper Sasha and Gabriel and Sasha's history going way back in season 5 and 6. Ah, Sasha. I miss Sasha, of course. Mm-hmm. I don't have to wait too long to see Sasha. She's on Star Trek Discovery, if you don't know that reference, by the way, listeners. My favorite character. Anyway. Is Negan I'm gonna let that sit for a minute. Is Negan badly injured from those landmines? Couldn't make out of it. Was Elijah or Negan that got hurt? One of them seemed to, anyway.
I think the answer is yes.
Yes, yeah. Also, really needed to have a second watch of this one to ensure I haven't missed any nuances in plot and characters. And yes, you do. And in fact, so do I. And I haven't had a chance to do that. But I will do that probably next week. So.
All right. Well, thank you all, Glennis, for the feedback. That's always great feedback all the time.
Yes. I'm
trying to go through. I think that, I guess we already just mentioned it. I was like, did Negan also get a little bit of shrapnel, or was it just Elijah or whoever we thought that might be? I thought two people got hit when it exploded.
I think he did.
Just like a little bit. Like one got in the leg.
I think he got a little bit when Elijah got some.
Okay. So they're both injured. All right. Well, that goes into our thoughts. Do you guys have anything left for this? I think everybody pretty much covered most of the stuff that I was going to bring up.
Well, we keep hearing about there being heartbreak coming. So I am wondering who the heartbreak is. I would have to think that, what's his name?
Alden.
Thank you.
Yes, we have to find out what happened to Alden.
I expect Alden to be a goner. I hate to say it, but I think Alden is probably a goner. And I wonder, you know, there's other first line characters that I think could die either in the second, section of eight or the third. I think we're probably going to lose, you know, some of the major cast or the second tier cast because I am hopefully looking for the story with the Commonwealth to, you know, ramp up, and I want to see a connection between the Commonwealth and the CRM. That there has to be one.
Yeah, that's after. Which we're going into World Beyond a little bit later. It's like, I almost kind of like, how can there not be? But
yeah. And it was hinted at, spoiler, it was hinted at that we would find out whether or not they know about each other, in the season. So there wasn't anything specified, but we would know. And, you know, either they do know each other or they don't, but we're going to find out. And right. the idea that they don't, if we find out after this that they don't know each other, I'm going to say, oh shit. Cause they have to, they are the Commonwealth is in between Omaha and the CRM.
Right.
So they have to have run across them. They have to have. Because
I think the Commonwealth is on the other side.
Define other side.
I think they're in between the Civic Republic and Alexandria.
Okay.
I think they're possible. On the east. I think they're on the eastern side.
Possible.
And the Civic Republic is New York west.
Okay.
So I think that south and east.
Okay.
Well, in that case, I would still say that they would have to know each other because the CRM has been to Texas, and we know they have.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've been there. They've been as far south as pretty close to
Austin or
Austin or.
Houston. Well,
right.
Austin, Houston. What's the name of the Galveston?
Yeah.
You know, so we know that they've been around there. So it just stands to reason.
Right.
That, they know about them. They had to have, because they know about Omaha, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, to get from New York State to Texas, you go to Nebraska and you turn left.
Yeah.
At least that's one way to go.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know,
or follow the big river south and turn right at Louisiana.
If the Commonwealth is either like between the CRM and Alexandria, I would think that they would have known them. If the Commonwealth was, say, between Alexandria and Florida or Georgia or something like that, chances are that they would know about the Whisperers, because we know that the Whisperers used to go south for the winter.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? So my thought, and I think, you know, spoiler, I think this is where they are in the comic book. I'm thinking Ohio, Pennsylvania, something or other like that. And if they're Ohio, chances are the CRM knows about them. Because, yeah, you know, that's like two states over. You know, that might put them in Columbus, Cincinnati. I wouldn't say Cleveland. That's probably too far north. But, you know, Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton, something like that. You know, anyway, that's it. That's all I have to say.
All right. LT, do you have anything?
Well, I think that I'll go back to something I said at the start of this part season, is I'd hoped that 11A would be better than 10C, and I think that is the case.
Yeah, I would agree.
I don't think that they quite picked it up as much as I wanted to from the end of 10B. I think it was slightly better, but there's still, you know, loose ends and too many unanswered questions and too many dangling plot hooks and things out there that I think they could have done a better job in tightening it up between 10B and 11A. Yeah. So they've got two more sets to tidy things up and, you know, restack the shelves and tie up those loose ends and land those plot hooks, and we'll just see if they can do it. And my heart is hopeful that it'll happen, but my head is looking at their track record of doing that with other things, and I'm kind of going, you know, I'm bracing for disappointment because I have a feeling I'm going to be.
Like, to me, I think that season 10 was pretty strong. The first two parts of season 10.
Right.
I don't even consider really 10C to be part of season 10. It's almost like something apart from itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the first two parts of season 10, I think, were great. I think they did quite a bit with season 9 after, you know, they lost Maggie and Rick. And it was very difficult for them to recover from that. But I think they largely did. I mean, and I say largely because, you know, I was kind of at a point there for a while. It's like, I don't know if I want to watch this anymore. I want my Rick back. But I think they largely, you know, kept it interesting. I think that season 11, I think it was certainly better than 10C. I don't think it was as good as 10A or B, but it had its moments. But I think it was better than 7 and 8. I'll say that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you that. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't like it, but there, as you had said, they had a lot of stuff happen with, I think, the length of the Savior War arc, the fact that they lost major characters that people were heavily invested in, the Whisperer War took a little longer than I wish it would have, and getting to where we were you know, post Whispers, pre Eugene's big adventure. I just think that they've got, they need to make some good connections and pay some storylines off so that they can go out on a very high note.
Well, I hope that's what they do, because I agree. Yep. This is it. This is the last chance. Last a few episodes. Well, all right. Well, then let's get into, which now I'm not going to say the kids show. I'm going to say World Beyond.
Just as a sidebar, we need a sounder for World Beyond.
A sounder? You need a sound
like
effect?
A bumper.
Yeah. The problem is, did they even have, like...
That's the chopper!
Well...
That'll work for temporary until I find one.
Oddly apropos.
All right. Well, let's just go into it. World Beyond, season 2, episode 2, Foothold. Written by Carson Moore and directed by Lauren Iaconelli. Description was, while some members of the group enact a plan to cover their tracks, others attempt to acclimate to their new surroundings. LT, you put stuff in here first, so let's get through our impressions, and then we'll go into our listeners. So take it away.
I did. Without giving a rating, I'm liking season 2 better so far in 2 episodes than I liked whatever we got in season 1. I think that if you look at season 1 as just exposition setting up this season, it makes it a little more palatable. As far as the episode in specific, I enjoyed seeing Hope's arc far more than I enjoyed seeing Iris's. I like the fact that Hope is back with her dad. I think that she sort of knows something is up, and I think that dad sort of suspects, but dad's not really, you know, dad's sort of still got some Kool-Aid in the system. I think it's interesting to see the reactions with Hope and Dr. Sandwich. I'm still going to call her that from last season. She will forever be Dr. Sandwich. I think it's funny that Hope is scoping the place out and she's eyeballing security and she's, you know, really doing the, you know, guard patterns and checking for locked doors and, you know, surveillance cameras.
Yeah.
As far as it goes, you know, back to Iris's line, the art commune is still making me very wary. I know that they seem to be, you know, trying to get along with the CR people, and they're dealing with Kublik, and they're trying not to let on that they have spies in their midst. By the way, just as a side note, if you're going to have something that is dangerous and going to get you in trouble, don't leave it laying on your desk, for God's sake. You know, put it in a drawer. Put a book on top of it. That was like the worst camo job ever. Yes, the window's open and you put a piece of freaking typing paper on top of it.
I thought the same thing. I was like, it's what?
Like, it's like, Jesus, you hippie. Haven't you ever been searched by the cops before? Yeah, cover it up.
Or they had to by the CRM. I mean, they've been dealing with them. It's funny.
Like I said, I thought it was good to see Silas. I think it was interesting that they got him in the, I don't really understand why or how all these zombies got in the zombie, you know, the zombie death facility that Silas is working at. Unless they're making compost like the tree people did in Fear, that part I was still sort of scratching my noggin on, unless these are the infungused test subjects from the lab. We did get to see a screenshot of Corduroy Suit and Percy.
Yep. Next episode.
So, you know, we do know that they're still doing something and that they may have some screen time. I'm going to say it again. Iris is just not hooking with me, because for every glimmer she has that I'm kind of going, okay, I get it. I'm starting to, you know, have some sympathy and some feelings for your character. Then the next time it's like plank. Yep. I mean,
she's just not popping, you know, it's like, I agree with you.
It's like, sometimes she's just like, it's bad in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah.
Now in my notes, I have the boys and it's Felix's boyfriend. I can't think of his name right off the top of my head. To me, Felix is suddenly inconsistent. Because, you know, before he was like, got to protect the girls, got to do this thing. And, you know, now he just seems kind of wishy-washy. I don't get the same focus and resolution with that character that I did last season. I'm struggling more with parts of the Iris and Felix storyline than I am with the Hope part of the storyline. And I wonder how it's going to be with, like I said, Percy and the suit when they show back up to see how they are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we've gotten two episodes of the sisters and we've seen, you know, Kublik, we've seen Huck, we've seen Felix. So, and we got Silas this week. So they're the only two of the characters that came out of the end of season one that we haven't seen anything from yet. And I'm just kind of wondering, it's going to be episode three. So we've waited a while before we've resolved what they've been up to all this time.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, talking about Felix, I kind of do agree, because it kind of was weird, or it kind of threw me off to, like, you know, he was doing this whole thing, yes, to protect the girls, and it was like, that was his mission or whatever. But then, like, now that he's just with Iris, with Iris, and she's all like having her PTSD and basically like, oh, no, it's a war with the CRM, you know, whatever. And then he's all like, kind of like, oh, okay, sure. Like, you know, like, I'm right there with you. But then a few scenes before that, he was talking to the artist people at the beginning when they were trying to find the walker, they were going to basically lead the CRM as like, you know, of the soldier that she killed. But then she's like, no, I think it's them. I think they were the ones that destroyed the campus colony, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, why would they do that? Like, then they were questioning her to now all of a sudden he's like agreeing with her and being like, oh yeah, it's all at war. And he's like, okay, sure. So I don't know. I didn't quite understand that at all, or just it kind of came off and I'm like, I'm not sure what's going on with this. It was just weird. Seeing Silas definitely was, I was kind of like, yes, because I mean, I'm not too big on what's his face and Percy. I'm completely fine, but I mean, I'm sure they'll play some role in somewhere, maybe with Silas, because they'll maybe walk up on him cleaning off the walkers. But that's what I thought that guy said, who I guess is now the boyfriend to what's her name, daughter's Lieutenant Colonel daughter, can't remember her name, Huck. And he said something like, they've set up these kill zones like all throughout the state, and I guess they have some plan that like they lead herds and stuff into there, kill them to clear them out. And I think he said, you know, said like, oh, like after some time, if our calculations are correct, then basically we'll have killed enough of them that there's not going to, you know, be any in the state. And they have some kind of countermeasures to keep them away from New York, I guess, or whatever. So I thought that was interesting. On top of like, they obviously have this fungus thing that makes them turn into like nothing, you know, like nothing, or, you know, like somehow stop the walkers from moving. Yeah. I thought it was,
well, they're looking for something,
or I think he said preliminary, and like that whole video was like, oh, we've learned, but not sure that it, I guess it's in actual practice.
It's interesting. And it's also the most deeply perplexing and the thing that I don't understand the most.
Yeah.
So when it's my turn, I will, yeah, I will steer it, things. So,
well, go ahead.
No, I'll hold off on that, because I had one question that I'm just going to throw out here real quick is, I guess the CDC didn't share anything they found out in season one of the main show.
You see, in this universe, the CDC, if there's some like awful catastrophe, they're designed after a fashion to blow up. And therefore never,
everything's gone.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, maybe whoever took over from Fauci was about the smarter.
Yeah.
But I just think that we knew more about the zombies 10 years ago than apparently the CRM knows now.
Yeah. Yeah. And in some ways, like, what's his face? Milton. The governor's, you know, lackey, you know, knew some things that the CRM didn't know, or at least he knew years before, you know. So,
oh, CRMs, they keep killing off massive batch of people.
Don't get me wrong. They've learned some things, but
yeah,
you know. Okay, so is it my turn?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, this plot, this story doesn't make sense to me. It hasn't made sense to me since we found out, and well, we suspected from the very beginning, that the CRM killed Omaha. You know, they leveled it. Mm-hmm. They killed the campus colony. The more evidence that we get, the less it makes sense to me. Okay? In an apocalypse, the one thing... okay. Renee, please give me this one, okay? I know you hate him, but the one thing that Negan says is that people are a resource. Obviously, this is something that the CRM have never learned, because they would have they destroyed 100,000 people, and you know, whoever knows how many thousand in at the campus colony. For what? Why? Why did they do this? They have this system they're working on to eradicate the zombies, right? Both in the culling of them and, you know, this fungus that they're working on, okay? The fungus is one thing, but whatever. But, you know, wouldn't you want to put that stuff out in Nebraska, or out, you know, towards, you know, on the other side of the Mississippi, so that, you know, oh, I don't know, those that are out there won't come out to New York State, you know? And like, she even said it this time, that, you know, they, these bands of, you know, walkers just like aimlessly travel, you know, throughout the continents, you know, just, and just destroy, you know, whatever they come across. So you've got 100,000 people. To me, if you've got six, you know, prototype facilities that are killing these walkers out, and they are getting somewhere, you got 100,000 people. How many do you have in your area?
Right.
why don't you take them and teach them how to do this? And maybe they might be able to get rid of some. Okay, it's Omaha. All right. There's not that much in the prairie states. Okay. Maybe some of them might want to, I don't know, move out to Chicago or, you know, whatever. Go back to California. Who knows? I just don't understand their motivation for killing those two settlements. It doesn't make sense. No single untrained person, I don't care how smart they are. I don't care if they have an IQ of 750. Okay. No one is that valuable. An untrained mind cannot get rid of the zombie apocalypse. It would take decades to learn how to do that. You can't, it makes no sense to me.
Well, and think about it from exactly what you're saying. If people are a commodity, if people are a resource, how long does it take for you to make someone who can work and actually do things properly from scratch? And yeah. I would say 16 years, 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably maybe more.
How much is it going to take to train a guy like Silas?
Right.
Yeah.
Weeks.
But how much is it going to, how long is it going to take for you to make a new Silas?
Right.
So that's your 100,000 argument. If you're going to say, well, they're too much of a drain on resources, then you break them up into groups and you put them on a bus and you send them out across the plains and do, as much as I hate to bring this up, do the Oregon freaking trail. Put them in a wagon and say, go west, young man, and send them out to another state. But, you know, spread your colony far and wide.
Well, right. Yeah. Why wouldn't they want to have, I mean, other than less, I mean, we can see that they have some kind of like, they want control over things, because the whole point of their little research center where dad is like, they're saying, hey, work for us and do it or work, you know, we'll do something bad to you, whatever. But you're there to train the next generation, and then that next generation trains the next generation.
Yeah, but that's the problem.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
You're the next generation.
Right. And it's like,
you can't train anyone yet because you haven't been trained yourself. So, right. It, you know, it's like 20 years from now, you'll start training the next generation. But until then, you will be the one getting trained.
Trained, yeah. Well, and it was weird too, like from the beginning of the season where it's like, you know, and Omaha. I guess it was, or the first city we saw, you know, they had like windmills, like big giant windmills. So they're generating electricity, and that's a technology that I would think you would be like, okay, that's, we need someone to build those and install those. And I'm assuming they blew down their wall. They had big walls and they blew down their walls to what? Take all that away from them. Like, was that the whole deal? Well,
no, it was to let in the walkers to kill them. Like it,
but to gather those, yeah.
Yeah, and if you're trying to kill walkers, what have you just done? You've created 100,000 new walkers.
Well, they didn't do it to kill walkers. They did it to let the walkers in. This is to bring in the horde.
Well, right, but get my point that once
they've created the 100,000 new ones,
they've got Horde Plus now.
Yeah.
You said it, and I'd need a good reason.
Right.
And I don't think there is one.
And here's the thing, because I want to make this point very clear. I'm asking these questions. The fact that I'm asking these questions, I'm not saying I can't stand this show. This question is driving me crazy. I can't watch this show. Part of me wants to watch this show now because I have to know the answer. That's the stupid thing. It's like, now I want to keep watching because I have to know.
Yeah.
Why? Because it doesn't make sense to me, but I have to, you know, I'm I'm hopeful that in the next 8 episodes, I will get a reason. And, I'm hoping there is a justifiable reason, but it just seems counterintuitive to me. An untrained, brilliant person isn't worth 100,000 plus, you know, however many, and some of them very bright, right? Some of them, you know, we're at a university. Let's not forget about that point. So anyway, that is my point, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very curious. I want to know the answer. I hope it's going to be a good one. So, I am interested in the system, and it was the fact that hearing about this system made it even more curious. Now, getting a little bit more into this, by the way, we found out that the guy that Iris killed wasn't Kublik's lackey, which we thought that he was, but he's not. Also, we found out, well, we didn't know him, I guess, until this week, unless he was in the season finale and I forgot that he was there. But the guy that seems to be taking Salas under his wing is Huck's husband, right? Did you notice that?
I knew. I didn't realize. Like, I don't remember if she said she had a husband or not.
He was looking at a photo.
Yeah, of her.
And she was in the photo. So anyway. And then this whole pre-morbid thing. And I guess that scientist from Portland was the original or the last pre-morbid that became morbid or whatever. So who's this next pre-morbid going to be? Is it going to be like, makes me think it might be Felix's boyfriend or, you know, someone like that. I don't know. Any thoughts on who that might be?
No.
But the other thing that you brought up, LT, and I hadn't thought of it, but, you know, they brought up the whole thing about them, you know, bringing back agriculture and all of that. The idea of them using the walkers as a fertilizer, you know, the Teddy idea seems to make sense. You know, it's like the dinosaurs, right?
Yeah, they're still a biological. Like,
yeah.
Carbon and nitrogen and stuff.
I've heard stories about like you know, dead people that were put like in someone's garden, and you know, there were a bunch of flowers that grew over them, you know, or something like that. Not that I have any firsthand knowledge of that, but just stories I heard. So anyway.
The only thing that I kind of am getting, besides obviously these points, because it does, it's like, what's their whole end game? I don't get it, because they are like destroying resources, essentially. Yep. Mm-hmm. But it's like, but it is, I'm getting, I'm like, well, they're very dark. Like, they're very almost, you know, dictatorship and like by ruling on it with an iron hand, because they are always like you know, the lieutenant colonel and talking to the dad, and was just like, just the way she's talking to him, be like, oh yeah, but then you kind of, you know, messed up, and now, you know, we're going to kind of hold it against you, and you're here to work, you know. It's like they have some control, and it's also, yeah, like the whole artist group. Like, what is it that they need from them? Why are they still there? There are still museums out there that can get all the art that's probably still there.
Well, that's true. But they need the creativity, you know? Maybe that's what it is. They need the creativity, because sometimes scientific knowledge isn't enough. Sometimes science needs creativity to spurn it.
Well, and, good, you know, point, and we haven't seen that.
Right, we haven't seen it. And what was I going to say there? I brought up the point last week about the difference in philosophy with, say, the Commonwealth versus the CRM. And the CRM is trying to build a future that is not the same future. You know, it's not based on the past. It's a new future, you know, designed to last based on, you know, like eradicating the threat. I'm guessing they want to be able to not just kill the zombies, but be able to do something so that humans don't turn into them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing that in the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth want to restore the closest thing that they can to the past. I'm guessing in the CRM, you know, in the Civic Republic, you can't get ice cream, or if you can, it's limited to, you know, a few people, but you know, it's not based on, you know, this kind of like, 50s, you know, Americana that the Commonwealth is. So it's like a different, you know, approach. Whereas, Ginny's, you know, vision was based on, the Old West, and, Teddy's vision was also based on, you know, a new start. Right. But also kind of, you know, with a serial killer tinge, you know? So, I mean, and there are some parallels there between these groups, Pope and that group. They just don't, they're not even close, you know,
they don't have
any. The Whisperers, though, in another way, they also had a way to, you know, move on. Their method was to, you know, to survive by joining along, you know, and to, fit in, kind of.
Yeah. So their outlook on life was that the dead and zombies were, that was life now. Like, yes, that's reality.
This is life now. You have to,
Go with it. Be part of it. Yeah. Embrace it as they did.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, and it's all your vision of the future. So the Civic Republic is trying to build a new future, knowing that there's been a zombie apocalypse. The Commonwealth is trying to make a new future, almost hiding the fact that there's been a zombie apocalypse. And the Whisperers were forging a new civilization, embracing the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I think the one big difference between the CR and the Commonwealth that I'm seeing is the Commonwealth almost, it's kind of like a family that's in denial of your little sister that's got, you know, something, you know, a physical defect or lost a leg or something, that we just sort of don't talk about it. And we, you know, we play around it, and, you know, there's nothing wrong. You know, there's nothing wrong with little Boopsie, you know, everything's fine. And the Civic Republic kind of realizes that there's been a zombie apocalypse, and their thing is, we are going to, you know, endeavor to persevere to, you know, keep civilization rolling in spite of the onset of the zombies, and almost use the zombies to reinforce the power structure. That I don't see the Commonwealth using the zombies so much as reinforcing the power structure, that they're just saying, if you want to live here in our wonderful little paradise, you've got to play by our rules.
Right.
All right. Well, was that it for ours? Because we have a couple listeners' voice or feedback.
That's all really. I think we've hit everything I was thinking about.
All right. Well, Glenn is from Toronto. She said, I enjoyed the world
The Walking Dead World Beyond Episode 2. In case you're going to talk about it too, this time around, Iris is becoming a killing machine in stark contrast to Season 1. She and Daryl should meet. That crack arrow shot of the empty to save Felix. Hope is bidding her time and will formulate her plan once she's got the lay of the land with the CRM schedules. All three shows have got a contingent that are designed to kill zombies, with Silas now lumping into killing off zombies like Alicia and Strand did for Virginia in Fear of the Walking Dead, and now the Commonwealth in The Walking Dead. So we'll wait for the moment when the zombies get out of hand, which they are going to do eventually. And put Silas' life or someone else's life in jeopardy. And he can make a break for it and stow away on a chopper or army truck destined for the research lab. All right. Well, who wants to take Renee?
Okay. Renee from Atlanta says 8 out of 10, Hope is going to have a boyfriend. I roll. Overall, it was a pretty decent episode. I was happy to see Silas, even though he's still walking around looking like a sad puppy. I'm going to need him to get it together. And she shrugs. When the guy that drove him there pulled out that pick, I said, Huck is going to be on there with him. I can't wait to see where we're headed with the storyline. Also, Huck's mother needs to die or get bit, because she also has that dictator vibe about her. What's the plan with Iris and Felix and his boyfriend and the walkers? I haven't figured that out yet. Leo seems to have remorse about helping the CRM. I don't know about his girlfriend yet. She's strange, but I do know something is definitely up with the CRM. Alrighty, that's my feedback for this week. You guys stay blessed.
Thank you, Renee.
And just something that popped into my head when you were reading that, we did get a mention of a major general.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So obviously the major general is the person giving Kublik orders, not, so she is following the orders.
She is not the top of the food chain.
Right. So, and it sounds like this major general is a piece of work. So hopefully we won't have to wait too long to find out who this guy is and maybe find out a little bit about what drives this guy. It might finally, you know, and it was talked about this episode by, what is the father's name? Leo? Is it Leo?
Oh, dad's name? Oh, yeah.
Dr. Hope and Iris's dad?
Leo Bennett.
Dr. Leo Bennett. I was right. Okay. Yes. Anyway, he even mentioned, you know, about like he didn't like the methods of the military, you know, of the Soviet Republic, but it also sounded like, you know, wasn't much he could do about it. And it was also, you know, he went to Kublik, complained, and it was kind of like, well, you might complain, but we still know that despite you complaining, you're just going to keep doing what you're doing, because, you know, somehow they've been able to do this big, you know, psychological profile, which somehow they did for Hope. You know, how they did that, I don't know, considering Hope wasn't there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we
plothole.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we still have, you know, Dr. Hope and Iris's dad and Dr. Sandwich doing their thing. And of course, sadly, they have, he used to be Dr. Portland, but I guess now he's Dr. Specimen.
Yes.
So I wish they would at least tell me why. Was he just sloppy one day and got bit in the lab?
Or did he ask the wrong questions? You know,
all right.
He went into the room that says authorized personnel only.
Only.
He stole a mop.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get into news, ratings, and info.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
All right. So, a lot of news this week. First thing is, of course, that AMC announced that part two of season 11 of The Walking Dead returns to AMC Network Sunday, February 24th, and to AMC Plus on Sunday, February 17th. So if you have AMC Plus, you can watch it the week before. Even, I'd say, bigger news this week. This was announced yesterday, Tuesday the 12th. A new series, which had been talked about, but it has finally been given the green light. Tales from the Walking Dead has been picked up to series at AMC. It is an anthology series, so it'll basically be a different episode, like with a different, it'll almost be like Twilight Zone for The Walking Dead, with a different storyline each week. But it has a summer 2022 debut, and I got this quote from the Hollywood Reporter. It says, each hour-long episode of Tales will be focused on new and established characters that are based in the larger world of The Walking Dead. Channing Powell, who has been a writer and producer on the flagship series and its first spinoff, Fear the Walking Dead, will serve as showrunner on Tales and work alongside franchise content chief Scott M. Gimple on the series. The initial order is for 6 episodes with production on the AMC Studios drama set to begin early next year. So Fear was and The Walking Dead, that first season is only going to get 6 episodes. So, you know, obviously if it's a success, they'll probably bring it back for more, but, it is interesting because they are talking about, you know, we could see characters that we've already, you know, that we already know, and there could be other characters. So hopefully I would like to see a mix of both. So what do you guys think?
I'm fairly excited. I mean, I think there's a lot they could do with it. The phrase that I heard was a potential new series incubator.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
That apparently if they have an episode with 2 new characters and, you know, the ratings are high enough and the interest group polls well enough that, you know, we could see, you know, the Jim Bob and Loretta Walking Dead adventure show, or, you know, whoever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was going to say they had said they're going to do some existing character stories. There are going to be new characters. There's going to be new places, new situations. So
new styles, you know, that we mm-hmm. could see, animated, we could see 3D, you know, we could see, things that are in another zombie apocalypse, maybe. I don't know. Maybe we could see the zombie apocalypse going on in a different continent or a different country or a different area that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, that would be
so. You know, certainly I'd like to see it with different characters. Yeah. I'd like to see it with, scientists, you know, the military. What's the military doing all this time? You know, maybe they've, you know, what's it like to survive this on a, you know, tropical beach?
Or,
you know?
Yeah, like Hawaii.
You know, what's the zombie apocalypse like in Hawaii or Barbados or Aruba? You know, is it bad there, or, you know, is it basically, you know, a place that you would want to get to if you could, you know? I like it. You know, it could suck. It could not suck. Backdoor pilot is the kind of thing that I guess you're talking about, LT. And I could see that happening. Hmm. Now, I wanted to highlight, who is Channing Powell? Why? Because Channing Powell has been heavily involved in The Walking Dead, has written as many episodes of this show as anyone. Probably Angela Kang and Scott M. Gimple, you know, might be the only people that could match her. But here are some of the episodes that she has written over the years. So I'm just going to go through this at 60 miles an hour. So season 4, episode 5, Internment. That was Herschel's big episode. So, you know, at the prison. Season 4, episode 10, Inmates. She wrote that with Matthew Negretti, who's the showrunner on World Beyond. That's the one where we see Abraham, Rosita, and Eugene's first appearance. And, you know, that's the one also where Glenn and Tara, you know, first kind of meet, and they're, you know, going down the road. Now you get to season five, episode 4, Slab Town. That was, of course, the Beth at the hospital episode. Now that was also with Matthew Negretti. Season 5, episode 12, Remember. Now Remember was the episode that they first get settled into Alexandria. They arrive there the previous episode, but they, you know, go through the interviews and stuff like that. And if you remember, this was said.
Who's Deanna?
Anyway. And then she wrote season 6, episode 7, Heads Up, also known as Glenn's Alive and Was Under the Dumpster. Season 6, episode 11, Knots Untie, also with Matthew Negretti. And as you can see, she's written a lot of episodes with Matthew Negretti. And that was the first time that we see the Hilltop. Season 6, episode 15, East. Now that was also written with Scott M. Gimple. Best thing I can remember about that one was Carol flees Alexandria, and she's got that sleeve machine gun, and she mows down the saviors with that. And Morgan and Rick go after her. Season 7, episode 5, Go-Getters, and this is with Simon at the Hilltop. Carl sneaks into a savior's truck. Season 7, episode 8, Heart Still Beating, also with written with Matthew Negretti. This is a big one. This was a mid-season finale. This is where Olivia is killed by a rat, and Spencer is, his guts are, you know, cut all over the place by Negan, and that's the one where you got no guts. Anyway, season 7, episode 10, New Best Friend, the Jadis episode. Season 8, episode 2, The Damned, also with Matthew Negretti again. This is where the return of Morales. Season 8, episode 3, Monsters, also with Matthew Negretti again. This is the death of Morales and Aaron's boyfriend, Eric. Season 8, episode 9, Honor, with Matthew Negretti again. And unfortunately, talk about death, this is the one where Carl dies. Season 8, episode 10, The Lost and the Plunderers, with Angela Kang and Corey Reed. This is where Simon kind of goes nuts and kills all of Jadis's people at the garbage dump. Season 8, episode 12, The Key, written with Corey Reed, Negan, and Rick's fight, and Simon's kind of plotting to take over the saviors. Then she's off for a while, comes back at season 9, episode 10, Omega. That's where we see Lydia at the Hilltop. By this time, of course, Rick is gone. A big episode here, season 9, episode 15, The Calm Before, and that's with Geraldine Inua. Why do I bring this one up? That's the Pikes episode. That's a big one. Season 10, episode 14 is the last one she wrote for The Walking Dead. That's Look at the Flowers. That's, of course, a big Carol episode, and that's where we first see Princess. Then she wrote 2 episodes of Fear, season 6, episode 11, The Holding. That's a first appearance of Teddy. And season 6, episode 14, Mother, with Alex Delisle, the last time we have seen Alicia. So, anyway, lot there. So,
yeah,
she's...
Lots of episodes.
Lots of it. Okay, next thing. This is kind of executive news, and this is why I say that, you know, so much has been going on in the background. AMC Network's Chief Operating Officer Ed Carroll is to step down. He's been with the network for 34 years and will remain through the end of the year. Matt Blank is taking over as the AMC Network's interim CEO. I know that Ed Carroll's boss for, you know, all of these many years, I don't have his name, but I think it's like Sapan. I don't know. Anyway, he also recently left or is in the process of leaving. So, Carroll has been involved with Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, The Walking Dead, Kevin Can F Himself, Killing Eve, Portlandia, Documentary Now, Rectify, WeTV's Love After Lockup. We won't hold that against him. he helped lead the creation of AMC Studios, enabling the company to produce its own content, and including the Walking Dead franchise and expanding into the Anne Rice universe with the upcoming interview with the Vampire series slated for next year. So, a lot. Anyway, so what does this mean? I don't know. Will it affect the movies? Who knows? It could. So, anyway.
Yep.
Lots of stuff going on.
Lots of changes.
So, with a new CEO, there may be new emphasis on something else.
Yep. Yes. There could be belt tightening. There could be, you know, oh, we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to get into reality, you know. We're going to have reality zombies, you know. We're going to see if we can make zombies a reality.
Or we're going to
anyway.
Or we're going to go back to showing old movies like we used to.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. Exactly. All right. So for ratings this week, The Walking Dead, Season 11, Episode 8. It was up this week. It got a 0.53 in the 18 to 49 with 1.914 million viewers. That is up from last week's 0.47 in the 18 to 49 with 1.891 million viewers. In the 25 to 54, it was up with a 0.76 versus a 0.68 last week. In the 50 and over, it was down slightly with a 0.99 versus last week's 1.02. In The Walking Dead World Beyond, we got a mixed bag. It was down slightly in the 18 to 49 with 0.19, 18 to 49 with 807,000 viewers. Slightly down with 0.20 in the 18 to 49 last week. And slightly up from 753,000 viewers last week. Talking Dead, however, was down in both categories. It got a 0.08 in the 18 to 49 with 303,000 viewers, down 100,000 viewers. The population of Omaha in the zombie apocalypse. It's because of them. It's yes. Because of the CRM. They killed them. Anyway, so last week, Talking Dead got a 0.10 in the 18 to 49 with 403,000 viewers. So I blame you, CRM. In the Parrots, The Walking Dead dropped to number 6 this week from number 4, where it had been the last 3 weeks, at 44.4 times the demand of an average show. Down from 45.7 last week. Remaining at number 1 is perennial SpongeBob SquarePants with 74.6 times the average show, up from 73 times last week. And LT, you'll find this funny. I asked Larry Nemechek today, why does he think that SpongeBob is the number 1 all the time? Of course, he's been watching these longer than I have, so I wanted to get his take. And he had the same reaction that we do every week. He's like, I don't know. Anyway, well, so SpongeBob.
I have a prediction. just looking at the parrots, I noticed the Squid Game has come onto the board.
Mm.
And I expect it to be moving upwards fairly strongly, just based on all the buzz that I'm hearing about that.
I don't even know what that is. So
it's on Netflix.
It's a Netflix Korean horror series.
Mm. Okay. Well, anyway, number two, but way up in that position, is Saturday Night Live with 66.1 times, up from 53.7 times last week. Why?
Kardashians.
I just don't understand it. I'm out of their target market, I guess. I just don't get them. I don't get why they're so interesting. They're not interesting to me. But anyway, remaining at number three is My Hero Academia at 50.4 times, down from 51.5 last week. That's it for news.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Brian. Interesting that at least ratings went up for the finale of part one.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where Fear's ratings are next week.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, LT, why don't you tell people how to interact and support us?
We want to encourage you to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. That's at WalkingDeadTTM. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group. That's facebook.com/group/WalkingDeadTTM. You can send us email. That's walkingdead@talkthroughmedia.com. You can also use our feedback forum. That's at talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can give us a call at 216-232-6146. Remember that all of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media and remember to subscribe and click that bell to get notified when we have new videos. The podcast goes out first to YouTube before it hits your usual podcast consumption places.
All right. To support us, like and review the Talk Through Media Facebook page at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. And the best way you can support us is as our Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/walkingdeadtalkthrough. And as always, we would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Renee Murray, Lawrence Todd over there, me, and our newest Patreon supporter, Dieta Patterson. Remember that Dieta, Clinton, and Renee will be getting the early versions of episode this week. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or your podcast client of choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. You can also leave us a review at podchaser.com. And there you can actually rate individual episodes or the whole podcast. Remember to share our posts on Facebook and Twitter when we post them, or tell a friend. Word of mouth is always the best way to get us new listeners. Where else can we be listened to, Brian?
Well, we are just completing the Star Trek Lower Decks podcast. This week will be the finale of Lower Decks for season two. And, especially the last couple of episodes have been just phenomenal. And, we look forward to it. They've had this pattern the first couple of seasons where the last three or four episodes are phenomenal. And we were told that we're going to get that this year. And so far, so good. So in a few hours from now, the finale will be out. I don't think I'm going to be able to stay up for it because I have to be up early for work, but I'll watch it as soon as I can. But yeah, so we're on there, part of the Talk Through Media Network, and you can get that as part of the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed and the Star Trek Picardcast feed. Now, things will be off for a couple of weeks, and we will be going away for a while. What will be returning in our place will be the podcast for Star Trek Prodigy, and with that will be James and Kim doing the podcast on Star Trek Prodigy. We will be making that podcast available on the same feeds, but it will get its own feed because it's a children's show. So we don't want, you know, to anyone that wants just to listen to it for kids, they're going to get that chance. So we'll have like a kid safe feed. Beyond that, Ruthie and I will be coming back in the middle of November to talk about Star Trek Discovery Season 4. And that is a big thing. And that'll be 13 episodes starting in November and going through until, I think, February. And then around the time that The Walking Dead comes back for 11B, that's around the time that Star Trek Picard will be coming. And that's 10 episodes. And Ruthie and I will be podcasting about that, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, lot coming down the way, because we'll...
Yes.
Fear about to kick back on this week or next or this Sunday. And
and Kyle and I will still be here in the fallout shelter bringing you all your fear.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, what's... I'm going to keep doing it, but it's nice that, for a few weeks there, none of us have to do two podcasts. We'll be just down to one. Oh yeah. And you've got a guest appearance coming up too, don't you, LT?
Or is that? It is sometime in the near future.
Oh, okay.
I have been rescheduled.
Oh, well, let us know.
Never mind.
But when it happens, I'll be sure to let you know.
It's also worth saying, for you listeners, that the artwork will be changing and we will miraculously become next week Fear the Walking Dead talk through. So, and of course, there is no Walking Dead World Beyond talk through.
No, it's just part of... Yes. It's a little blurb, which actually can last a while.
Yeah.
It's just Fear the Walking Dead talk through with additional World Beyond.
Yeah. And those podcasts are still on the main feed, but there's actually a separate feed for just Fear, you know? So just not that if you listen to this feed, you don't need to subscribe to that one, but one person in particular does.
Yes. All right. Well, the next episode of The Walking Dead season 11, episode 9, it was going to be on February 20th, 2022. We do not have, who it's written by, directed by. I couldn't find descriptions, any of that stuff.
No, there isn't any.
Yeah. So, but next week, World Beyond season 2, episode 3, called Exit Wounds, will air. And then that was written by Raina McKeldin. McClendon. And actually, interesting, directed by Aisha Tyler. So this should be interesting. I know she's been wanting to direct and be part of the show.
She directed Fear.
Which episode? I couldn't find it.
I don't know, but I know she did direct season 6, episode 13, JD. That was, of course, the episode that we meet John Dory's father and June, of course.
Yeah. No, probably interesting to see what she does for World Beyond, crossing over to a different part of the world. The description of Exit Wound is an attempted grift leads to a precarious situation. Huck is given an ultimatum as she readjusts to her old life. And then, of course, Fear the Walking Dead, Season 7, Episode 1, The Beacon, this Sunday. Written by Ian Goldberg and Andrew Chambliss, and directed by none other than Michael E. Satrazimus. I couldn't find an AMC... I couldn't find a description for this everywhere, but on YouTube it was said, while most of the landscape is destroyed by nuclear warheads, Strand thrives in one of the few inhabitable places left. Strand's search for survivors uncovers a stranger with an unexpected, and then it was ... So,
you couldn't find one because I have one right here. I wish I had known that.
You should have put okay
with an unexpected hat,
or
Yeah. Teddy brought about his vision of the end. When he detonated warheads, it will be up to those who survive to decide what the beginning will look like.
Huh. Much different than the one I had.
And I also see, in the aftermath of nuclear destruction, Strand thrives in the new world.
Well, we know Strand is going to have some issues with Morgan, and I guess who else is he runs across?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard two things. I've heard that it's awesome this season, and I heard that it's crap.
So, well, so I've been looking forward to it, so I think let's just hope that it doesn't kind of fall off the last half of season 4. All right, well, so until next time, I'm Kyle.
I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.